Welcome to the Round 6 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day mate, how you going? I heard it was a good weekend for everyone this weekend.
Faz, who's joining us. Welcome, Faz.
G'day, gents. Lovely to be back.
He's here to bring up the average a little bit. I'm bringing down the average. Mark's just being Mark. You're in a regular range of acceptance. My score is not acceptable. My rank is not acceptable. And Faz is here to help boost the average. So, yeah, Faz, great.
If you don't lift your game, mate, it'll be me and Faz by ourselves next week.
Oh, that's fine, especially if you guys can take over the production of the show. It's cool.
The best news, Marcus, is every week.
Oh, far out. Let me tell you, listeners, it is hard to feel like when you all have a bad week, you get to just turn off the tank. You don't have to think about shit, all right? I've had 5 weeks of just awfulness. This is legitimately in 12 years. This is the worst start to a season I've ever experienced. Like every, and I'm not making egregiously poor calls, but like all the marginal calls are just working out terribly. So it's hard to back it up. Thankfully, we've got people with happier spirits to bring up the overall energy. So it's good to have you on board, Faz. Why don't you regale us of how your weekend went?
Sure thing. I'll try not to gloat too much. Team had another good week, 21:45, which I've just noticed was 1 point lower than the previous week. But this week, that was enough to push me up inside the top 1,000. So sitting at 917 rank right now. And I have you and a friend of the show, CJ, to thank for that. So most of the week, I was thinking of doing a Sicily upgrade. And, you know, had the trade all planned out and everything. And then I think it was Friday morning of, you know, during the day Friday, we were talking ahead of the Essendon game. And CJ in particular was very hot on Ridley. So I had a think and thought, you know, maybe there was worth taking the risk there with Ridley over Sicily. And boy, that paid off well for the first week. I think there's about 80-point difference there between Ridley and Sicily. And I also saved about 100K. So that's feeling fantastic right now. But, you know, it's a long season and Ridley's a young player, so we'll have to see how that plays out. And this week got the very common issue to deal with Matty Rowell. Unfortunately, the champion and hero that he is has gone down, so probably looking to move him on. Mark, how'd you go this week?
Not quite as good as you, mate. I was tracking really well till Sunday afternoon and then I had Sicily. Didn't work out so well. Would have much rather had Ridley and Segler. They just brought me down. But 2001, went up the rankings about 2,000 spots to inside the top 10,000 for the first time this year. So that feels like a good spot to be and to make a bit of a charge over the course of the season. So, pretty happy with how things went. Really happy with Taylor and King. Only one of them was on my field, but just earning some money up forward. And I brought in Stephen Hill this week and Hayden Young, who I think he's going to be a bit of a unique going forward, and he looks like a ripper of a player. So, fairly happy. And Viney was a bit of a downer as well. I could have traded him this week, but his disposal efficiency and his last quarter were awful. Marcus?
Yeah, a lot of people stuck with Viney, unfortunately, who probably wanted to all move him on after 3 weeks. So instead, I mean, you started with him, Mark, so not too bad. For people who brought him in, the fact that he missed the Melbourne week, the fact that we had so many injuries on the week that you wanted to trade him out, I'll end up getting like 60K and a whole bunch of 70s for him. So I end up just being an absolutely awful pick. Ideally, we traded him out 2 weeks earlier at 50K more. Yeah, so I got hit by Viney too. My trade in this week was Bontempelli over Oliver and Sicily, which I think is still not awful, but getting a 55 the week you trade somebody in sucks. I think I got 60 for Wingard the week I traded him in. So I'm just I'm a bad luck cat at the moment, unfortunately, but I'm hoping the team rebounds. Structurally, this team's fine. Doudais scored 116, averaging 80. So for the two-something I paid for him early, that's now working out okay. I think probably the part that's most painful about the team is just when you don't have Grundy, Gorn, Neil, and you've taken value, you need to have your premiums hit the value. Like, that's why these top-line premiums are worth so much, because their consistency is just so great. So I feel like structurally my team's done great, but the guys I've taken the risk on have not paid out. So even though I got value from Pitney over Gordon, and I'm still reasonably okay with that pick, like the premium I brought on field instead is Bontempelli or like a Tom Mitchell, and you know, you just won't cut the mustard with the cash generation benefits. So anyway, enough mulling over negativity. We have, most of us, 19 trades left. That's a fair bit of time to turn a season around. And I've never been one short for a challenge, Mark. I think the last 3 years, if anything, I think you've been taunting me most of the first half of the season, and I've come home strong. So I'll try and stay motivated, Mark. We've got a few questions on injuries and suspensions to start us off with this week. And the first one's from Chris Todd about Rao. How long should we expect him to be out for, given his scoring potential? And we have so many issues on field. Should we be considering keeping him? We had another question come through on Twitter from Richard Lauer Longy. He had some flashbacks to the conversation with Laughing Raccoon or Happy Raccoon on not side swapping once we're heading into the upgrade rhythm. And he was wondering how Rao sort of fits into that. I guess first up, you know, with a long-term injury or a medium-term injury this year, I think, you know, regardless of upgrade cadence or not, you just probably can't afford to be leaving 470K on your pine, not scoring points for a good 5 weeks. More than upgrade cadence and everything else, it's just it feels like too much value to park. Mark, do you want to give some guidance on how to approach Rao? And I guess now that we're heading into this upgrade cadence, how do people evaluate underperforming players like, you know, Segler or Viney or, you know, potential premium keepers? Like, I guess even if Fife gets injured this week, it was a bit more different from Fife getting injured a week ago.
Yeah.
What do you suggest how people can approach this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Rao being out for, if anyone's out for 4 or more weeks, it sucks that it impacts your upgrade cadence, but I think you just have to. And looking at Rao as a rookie rather than a premium changes things as well, because then like he's hit a lot of value when you're actually upgrading a rookie this week and getting a premium in. So that seems like a good move, and I'll definitely be moving him on this week. The other players that you're talking about, that it's quite interesting, the Seglers, the Vineys, the Dev Smiths, and how to handle those is actually going to be a bit tricky going forward. I think my plan at the moment is get the rookies off ground and then worry about those guys.
So I bring more of these types in. Give me a Jack Stephen this week, Mark.
Looking to probably not get the rookies off the... trying to get actual premiums in for them rather than too much value all the time. Pitney to Gorn is going to be a tricky one for those non-Gorn owners. I think that's going to sort of dominate my thinking over the next 2 or 3 weeks, is working out a way to have money for that. It's interesting.
He's bloody 750 right now.
Yeah, and realistically, like watching the Melbourne game,
Grace,
it's almost like Melbourne needs to change their game a little bit and not use him so much. They just constantly go through him. So, yeah it's
to be fair, their forward line doesn't look like it functions, and neither do basically every other part except for their following players.
Yeah, Max Gorn and their 4 good midfielders. They're doing all right. Petrarca smashing. Remember Dusty a few years ago, like would destroy first quarters and then disappear?
Yeah.
Petrarca's feeling a little bit like that he hasn't quite got the fitness, but the quality is there and it's coming. So I think that my plan is to just keep all these premiums, keep all the underperformers. And maybe a good example of that is Andy Brayshaw, who if Fife hadn't got injured this week, I might have actually traded on. But then I thought, no, Fife is out. Brayshaw might get midfield time, and he did. And he got 144. So I guess that you just hope that those guys spike at the right time. I'm focusing on rookies off ground at the moment. What about you?
Yeah, that's the same. I think, unfortunately, this week, Rao being out means that what you probably end up doing is banking cash for next week. Something to think about in terms of how you can catch up with upgrade cadence is by taking more value picks. You might be able to shave a downgrade and squeeze in an extra upgrade with one less downgrade to catch up that way. So if you're concerned about Rao being out and you want to catch up, that's certainly a strategy that you can look at. And that's why people obviously were targeting Ridley and Simpson aggressively, and that's obviously worked out previously. I'd say that moving forward, these types of value picks tend to carry more risk because they're coming off a poor patch of form rather than being deflated because they haven't yet increased in price. They haven't had enough price movement. So just keep that in mind. But, you know, that is one method to try and catch up. With the Raul situation, I think you just accept that, like, if anybody didn't start Raul, who averaged 100, went up to 470K to start the year, they're probably not in it anyway. So you're only really competing against Raul owners. So, you know, if you trade out Raul this week, you're competing against Raul owners who keep him, who are sacrificing potentially one premium's worth of scoring. So even if they keep that upgrade cadence going, they'll sacrifice 4 weeks of that advantage because they'll be missing a premium in that time, and that's going to largely offset a lot of the gains that they would otherwise get. So I just wouldn't be concerned at all, like, trade Raul this week. And he's also a kid, like, he's played 5 games. You have no idea when he comes back with a slightly sore shoulder how he's going to play. Let's talk about who we trade him to then. Jeff Lane's asking whether or not Jack Steele, Dylan Shiel, or Elliot Yeo are worth considering as value, or whether we should be, you know, as per John Piranha's question, moving up to a McRae type instead. Liam Barry on Twitter asked about Mitchell. We had a few questions about him. But I guess the one that seems to be most front of mind for most coaches is Elliot Yeo. And frankly, when I came out of lockout, he's the first guy I looked at. He's gone down to below 480K. He's a guy who's averaged 107 2 years in a row. And they're about to get out of the Queensland hub and move back up into the West Coast hub for a very foreseeable future. So he'll get a fair few home games, you'd think.
I did look into that, Marcus, and because I was thinking Hearn and Yeo getting cheap would be good options going back into Western Australia. But looking into their scores from the last couple of years, they actually don't average a lot more playing at home. They potentially average a little bit less. I didn't actually do the numbers, but just did sort of look over them, and it was pretty clear that they were doing just as well away from home as they were at home. So maybe not quite as big of an advantage as it seems on face value.
Yeah, no, definitely a good point. I guess where my head was going to was more the psychological effect potentially of returning home rather than having a ground advantage. Just think, like, coronavirus, it just didn't seem like they've handled being in a hub in quarantine for 3 weeks. And maybe that's a poor extrapolation to take very results-based thinking after seeing them lose. But the thought is that potentially it could be a good agitator to get home, get back to some normality. Like, I think Mark Robinson rated Elliot Yeo either top 10 or top 20 AFL players. You know, he's easily All-Australian player. Where you look at the midfielders, he makes the All-Australian team because he's the most flexible of all the midfielders. Like, he's that good a player. You would think at some stage he returns normal, and hopefully, you know, returning home is a catalyst for that. Although, you know, I agree with you, Mark. I don't think there's noted ground-specific advantages for Elliot Yeo. You know, having said that, would you still consider him at 480? Like, if he averages 108, that'd be fantastic at 480.
And potentially he averages more than that, right? Because he does seem a patchy sort of player.
Correct.
And so he could still end up with 108 average for the season, which means he's actually going to average more than that from here.
Correct.
And so, yeah, definitely watch him really closely on the weekend. I think Shuey out is an advantage for him.
Yes.
I think that West Coast getting better is an advantage for him. I wonder whether he was affected by Tim Kelly a bit earlier in this season as well as the hub stuff.
I looked at his centre bounce attendances. He's been numero uno. And I think Yeo Shuey, that's their number one, number two, like, follow inside the contest clearance mids. And then I think Kelly three. Like, just based off what I've noticed over the game time that he's got in the middle, Elliot Yeo still seems like the king of that midfield to me.
Yeah, and it's weird to have a player that's the king of the midfield that is never going to receive attention. Like, he's just not going to get tagged. You would have Gaff way ahead of him, Kelly ahead of him, just because they're probably more taggable sort of players.
He was tagged when he was playing half back. Do you remember when he was making that transition?
Yeah.
And he was really dangerous getting big meters gained off the half back. Yeo's another player where I figured even if they chucked him into half back, switching into the forward line, he could even get a points gain for it.
Can I sort of put this one out there? This is for my team. I'm probably Yo's right up there for my team, but I'm sort of comparing Yeo versus Ridley even this week. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that seems nuts. It's a 50K price difference. A dude's never done it before. He's available in the back line. One's in the midfield.
It's not 50. Like, I think
it's less than 50K.
Yo's more expensive than Ridley. Ridley's still only like 458.
that's even more in your favor then. Like, it just, that seems, I mean, Ridley's obviously in such bloody fantastic form that we can even be having this conversation. Like, are you kidding me? Elliot Yeo at 480 versus Jordan Ridley at 460. Is this really a conversation? I guess that just shows how great Ridley's form is. I wouldn't personally consider it.
I think that the other factor is the change this year. It seems that Ridley really seems to be playing the Jeremy Howe role.
Dude, Phil Davis scored 90 on the weekend. Jake Colajasny scored 120 and then scored 40 this week. There are points going to intercepting backline defenders that we have never seen. It is insane. Absolutely insane.
So that's why we're having the conversation.
That's a good point. Maybe we hope Elliot Yeo goes plays halfback again. I mean, he scores really well off halfback. Serious question, I don't think I would do it. I mean, I took Bont over Sicily, and I get that it's a slightly different value equation, but I think I would still go with the consistency and the reliability.
All right, well, let's throw it to sort of the way that the questions have gone from the way that they've come in. So Yeo versus Dylan Scheel, Jack Steele type?
Elliot Yeo.
Yeah, I'd have it clear Yeo there that Dylan Scheel and Jack Steele both had great starts to the year. They're both averaging Steele 117, Dylan Scheel's up at 124, but neither of these two players have ever shown that level of scoring in the past.
Yeah,
I know that there are unique circumstances at both clubs. Dylan's probably benefiting from Heppel being absent and no Zach Merritt on the weekend. And at St Kilda, it's just a completely different midfield mix with all of their off-season moves. But if I can get, you know, it's almost $100,000 difference, you know, or let's say, what, 80K you're saving for Elliot Yeo from Jack Steele. Elliot Yeo's done it before, has had a very poor start to the season. But what I noticed is he had two scores below 60 already this year, which is why his price is so low. He's had two scores below 60 across 2018 and 2019. So I think, you know, there is that, he has that tendency to, you know, have big games and quieter games, but these quiet games he's had this year are sort of unprecedentedly quiet. And I don't think that that's a sign that his scoring is going to really drop off. I think it's just, you know, a bit of an anomaly. It's a strange season this year. And I think that it's just going to bounce back. And to get him at under 500K, I'm super excited about it.
I think, we probably should call out, like, there's still some risk. I think we're all really excited by the value. And I certainly wouldn't be taking Steele or Scheel over him. But there's still some consideration, I think, that could be paid to, like, McRae or Mitchell types. Yeah. Like, guys that we considered at the top eight.
So these guys are both guys that have averaged over 120. And I know that McRae's done it a bunch of times. Should we be considering those guys over Yeo? Because both of those guys actually, given their previous scoring history, also present a whole bunch of value potentially.
Well, for me, I'm kind of making the assumption, well, if Elliot Yeo averages 105 to 110 at his current price point, what would I need McRae to average at his price point to be worthwhile me bringing him in? And I think what I would be looking at is him managing like a 120 plus, like 120 at the very minimum, probably 125 before I want to consider it. Because 120 is fairly replaceable from 115. Like, you're only losing 5 points per game there on your true upside versus gaining, like, let's say 15 points per game, 20 points per game potentially with Elliot Yeo. Whereas if you thought Jack McRae would just average 115, then he probably is more closely to fairly priced. He isn't a standout scorer, and then you definitely take Elliot Yeo, right? So I think you just have to make a guess as to what you think Mitchell or McRae will do, and then what's your limit in terms of what would you need them to score? What do those numbers look like for yourself, Mark? What would you like to see?
Yeah, I think you'd want to see him return to his previous 120 pluses, and like, there's not many players in the competition that do average 120 plus. So if you thought McRae was going to do that, then you'd
is 120 enough?
Yeah, look, I think it is, because most, you still probably, what, you make top eight mids with 115?
Correct.
So 120 is really pushing it. I guess that it gets a little bit tricky for me. So I really want Max Gawn. So, and what you were saying before about getting these full upgrades in, and you actually have to take a small upgrade sometimes. You have to, and probably this is the year where, because we're trying to upgrade so fast, that we probably take as much value as possible, and probably more than any previous year, which probably makes someone like Yeo stand out that little bit more. Interesting that McRae only had three scores below 100 all of last year and has already had three scores below 100 this year. So, and they were close to 100, but they were still below.
The point I was making the Faz with Ridley last weekend, even though I wasn't necessarily a fan of Ridley himself, is that the selection and that price point guards you against so much of the risk of that selection, especially in this year where points on field actually counts for a fair bit. So if you end up putting Ridley on and for 420 that Faz paid, on the average 90, and then you decide to swap him out later, it's actually probably doesn't really kill you. Like, but and Yo's a fairly similar case, right? Like if Elliot Yo averages 100 off 480 instead of 110, like, yeah, it's not a great pick. But at the same time, it doesn't really suck that much. Like the downside is pretty low. So that's the other thing I think that really plays into these guys' favor is that you can take a few more punts on these sorts of risk and then just clean up your mess at the end of the season. We've got heaps of trades left anyway. Like if you are trying to hit up the top line premiums every single week, you just won't be able to maintain that cadence anyway. And then you'll have to stop upgrading at some stage and they'll probably catch up regardless. I kind of feel like with how quickly we have to upgrade, you're going to have to make compromises regardless. Otherwise, you'll just have to stop. Like there's no way to upgrade to true premiums the entire time in, you know, a really condensed period of time without taking some sacrifices, right? Like, you know, even this week, you could look at Starcevic. And I think, you know, if you're an experienced enough coach, 300K for Brendan Starcevic is too little money. Like he's got the scoring potential to be 350, probably pick at 400. Like at its true maturity, he just needs a couple of good 80s down the track, which he's shown the capability to do.
Yeah.
But this season's about accelerating quickly. So you kind of want to get Starcevic out sooner than 400. And because he's 300 and everybody else is at 230, all of a sudden he becomes a heap more tempting, right? And so, you know, these are the things that you just want to think about as you're going through your upgrade process. I don't know if that necessarily answered the question too much. So maybe if we can just round it up by saying maybe a 1-2-3 taking value into consideration replacement for Raul this week. Mark, can I put you on the spot first?
Sure. So McRae, I think you can still look at because he's got 161 break even. I think that you look, I'd lean towards taking Yo first. I think Dylan Scheel has just got the game that's really suited to this year, but he's going to cop a lot of attention going forward. So I think that probably turns me off him a little bit. And yeah, I think that Yo, I think that you guys are right, basically, is that Yo is the standout option. And I personally probably have Ridley as second.
I'm going to go Yo one. I'm actually going to go Mitchell two. I think that even though he's looking pretty av so far, like av is still 110 and he's consistency is really good. So having jumped on Bontempelli and then him scoring a 55, like one of the greatest parts about getting a really great midfielder is when they're bloody consistent, and Mitchell has that in spades. Hopefully he builds throughout the second half of the season, coming back from still that broken leg and gets better. So I'd have him at two. And then even though I brought in McRae in recently, I've watched him get close to a good score and then just seem like he's not close enough. And it's now a 5-round sample size where he's averaging 100. Definitely makes me nervous because I paid 600 for him. So I think I'm actually a little bit more tentative on McRae now. And I go back to Oliver just because of that consistency that Oliver has. So I'll go one Yo, two Mitchell, three Oliver. Maybe a reflection of how badly I've been burned by my trainings recently. Faz?
Yeah, so I have Yo as the clear number one this week. Just that that cost saving is enormous. Just and to put it in context, this week in my team, it's probably going to allow me to go Raul and Starcevic. I can turn into Yo and Whitfield. So you know, it wouldn't be an option if I was looking at the Tom Mitchell.
Whitfield owners, look away.
that price bracket.
So can we throw that out there that Yo versus Whitfield this week?
I would have Whitfield pretty clearly on that one. Just a factor in that for me is that Elliot Yo's break even this week is not particularly low. He's got a 98 break even, so you know, certainly potential for his price to still jump up, but I just don't think it'll go up by too much.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Whitfield, I think you could really miss the boat here because he's at 440. I haven't looked up his
78.
Yeah, so you know, not a huge difference there, but the price, if you know, if they both come out and bang out 110s this week, you get burnt more by leaving Whitfield behind than you do with Yo. So,
I was looking at Whitfield and having Keenly watched him because I don't have him.
we probably watched him more than people that do have him because he's such an such a heavily selected pick. He still is getting a ridiculous amount of the ball. Like I get so worried watching him.
Mm.
And either through poor possession, giving away free kicks, or a few holding the ball decisions, I think it's obviously affected his final score, but 21, 19, 24, and 28. That's his disposal count. Like, look at the AFL with the reduced quarters. That's right up there this year. He's only a few effective kicks away from 120s, 130s. Like I saw a lot of question marks over his long-term viability as a premium, and I definitely am concerned because he spent the first three rounds, I think, playing in the halfback. Probably paid a little bit of attention once he had that injury game and his price was going down. I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll bring him in regardless. According to Fan Footy, he might have spent a bit more time on the wing. There is role uncertainty. I think I flagged that I saw Kelly almost seem to take over his spot. But then there's injuries in GWS as well. Like Callum Ward went down and they've gotten hit by a few injuries. So, yeah, I agree. Whitfield easily over Yeo for me. But we're non-owners, right? So we're looking at the upside. You're an owner, Mark, and I guess you have some concerns over what he's currently doing?
No, his output, like you said, his actual scoring hasn't been that great, but I don't think he's too far off having a good one. I think potentially he struggles a little bit that there's so many players competing for points at the Giants.
Yeah, Nick Kelly's Haynes, the same bucket, Kelly, honestly.
Yeah, I think that Kelly in a different side might be averaging significantly higher potentially. And I'm not, like, he's a little bit outside of, like, there is some evidence that maybe this year isn't perfectly suited to him. And at 600K, it was a mistake to bring him in based on what we're seeing this year. But at 440K, I do think that he is a very, very obvious pick and available as a forward. And you would kind of back him to average the same as Yeo going on the run home. So cheaper and available as a forward. That could do that. So, absolute lock for me if I didn't have him, but I do have him. I just wonder maybe we'll get to this a little bit later. I just wonder in someone like Faz's situation where he's potentially looking at two upgrades and I could do two upgrades as well, how we, especially seeing as Rouse already so expensive, whether the rookies that are available this week factor into those, that decision making.
Yeah, that's a good question. Why don't we go to the rookies then, Mark? We'll start with this question from Miles Doherty asking about Jake Arts and his likelihood of staying in the team. So we'll cover a few of the rookies afterwards, but the only guy we seem to get questioned about is Arts so far and did score in the 70s, right?
76 on the weekend, yeah.
So obviously scoring is a tick already, but Richmond can have a few of those players filtering in and out of their team based on sort of flavor of the week and sort of week-to-week performances even. Concerns about his job security, Mark?
Yeah, I think that there are not like immediate short-term because Richmond, I think they're losing maybe six players this week with a whole bunch of injuries and two players not going into the hub. So although he doesn't, like, he's not a like-for-like replacement for a lot of those guys, given how well he played, like, he looked awesome. He definitely passed the eye test. He was really good on the weekend and, like, good enough that I was, like, 100% lock into my team. And with all those guys out, you would think that he would get at least a couple of weeks to prove himself. But, like you said, they can come in and out from Richmond sometimes. There are a bunch of those fringe sort of players still at Richmond that are pushing for spots. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Arts and think that he is an absolute lock this week. I guess the tricky bit is that he's a forward, and I guess we'd be looking at potentially trading Taylor or King to him before the weekend started, but they did so well on the weekend, you have to wait out their price rises now. So, it's just whether you can figure out a way to actually get him in. DPP is probably going to help you with that.
I personally am pretty okay to miss out on a rookie this week. And part of that is because of a question that we're about to cover in a little bit later around Jack Viney. So if you've got Viney and Raul, you move them sideways. Like, you can't really afford a rookie anymore. So I might be in a slightly different situation. Faz, what do you reckon about Arts and about a rookie this week?
So I think Arts in isolation is a pretty good pick. He's a mature age body. He spent 6 years in the VFL before Richmond picked him up at both Bendigo and on Richmond's VFL list. As we've already mentioned, there's been a slew of outs at Richmond recently, and I think probably Shane Edwards not travelling up to the hub is probably the most relevant for Arts' spot in the team. You raised already, Mark, that the concern is that some of the guys that came out of the side for Arts to come in the first place, so I'm thinking you know, Shai Bolton, Sydney Stack types will be pushing to come back into the team. But to sort of take it back a step, I think that we're getting to that point in the year where you'd really have to be blowing me away to be a must-have rookie. And that's just because I look through my team now and I see a whole bunch of guys that are lined up to be traded out of the side in the not-too-distant future. So I'm thinking the Max Kings, the Curtis Taylor, you know, even a Williamson who only came into the side a few weeks ago. He's already had a few price movements already, and so he's going to be hitting that peak ideal time to upgrade or downgrade much sooner than Arts will. And so while I like that there's a lot of ticks for Arts in terms of, you know, his scoring potential, I think his job security is pretty decent, plays at a good side in Richmond. I think that the issue is that, you know, what's the actual benefit to my side? Because he might go up in value, but I'm not sure how much that helps me because I'm...
If he goes up, then by the time you trade him out, would you have another rookie to downgrade instead of Arts anyway?
Exactly. Like, and so I'm just a bit hesitant to sort of
how much do you have to prioritize rookies essentially?
If door B is I can get Whitfield and Yeo into my side this week, they'll obviously both be on field scoring for me. I think that probably is worth more, you know, because I think Arts, while I say his scoring potential is good, what is it versus a Max King type? It's probably not that much different. It's very possible that Max King comes out on the weekend and outscores Arts. Yeah, I just don't think I need to prioritize it as much. I think he's a very good option. And if you're in that spot where you are, like, I guess it would be strange because most people have Rao, so they're going to have a sideways to do this week. But if you're in a spot where you can do one up, one down this week, I think Arts is a fantastic selection. I just don't think you need to interrupt other plans to get Arts in.
Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I do agree with that just because I think that we have to, I just think that there might be a bit of a lack of rookies that are going to play games coming through. And so ultimately you need to be bringing in rookies that are going to generate cash. It's not really about a points on field thing. It's about rather than having a whole bunch of these, like, so say Tyler Brown's dropped this week. Is it worth prioritizing dropping him, taking the 100K to Arts, who's going to make 100, 150K, rather than just let a dead player sit on your bench?
Yeah, I think it's more just if you're already going to be downgrading, then that's fine. But
I think that we've all got the option of like upgrading. Like I could do two upgrades this week as well.
Because of Rao, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that most
Well, not everyone
do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you had a 200K rookie, no cash in bank, and you had Rao, you might not be in a position to do that.
Yeah, I've got about 150K in bank from last week.
I think most of the people that would do it is because they've banked 150 for an early upgrade. Are you in a similar situation?
Yeah, I've got 165.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. 150 is about that spot where it can allow you to do that. I think it's more just to say you will have rookies in your team that will make that cash anyway, Mark. So it's not that you don't need that rookie, but you don't necessarily need that this week over next week. I think your point still holds. If you think rookies are not going to be available for downgrade next week, so if there are no debutants this week, you're like, fine, there's nobody to downgrade next week. Or if I don't take the downgrade this week and I do two upgrades this week, next week what do I do? Do I side swap if there are no rookies? To me, that's the relevant consideration. But, you know, Arts himself, marginally compared to his replacement, whether this week or a future week, or his replacement trade out, whether it's an existing rookie in your team, I think he will have, to Faz's previous point, a fairly limited effect on the overall sort of result of your team. And so happy to bring him in, but wouldn't be looking to downgrade this week just for that, unless you think there are no downgrade options next week. I think that's probably my caveat to that.
Yeah, and I think that there's a chance that there's no downgrade options next week, or there's a good chance that they're not as good as Arts. And I guess in my team, I'm trying to prioritize putting some cash away for Gorn ultimately.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I'd say a really good call out, and something that I'd say a lot of shows and we could have missed. Have a look, like, and I think we mentioned it last week, you need to look at team sheets every single week to inform your trade decisions, because rookies on the bubble inform your potential downgrades next week. Mm. So you can't even formulate too much of a long-term plan compared to previous years, because normally we're planning off like, all right, that dude already debuted, played one game.
Yeah, it looked good. We can watch him again.
Yeah. Now it's like, no, I can't make a call until I know the number of debutants and the likelihood of those debutants to stay on that following week. right? Like, yeah. So it's a very good point on Art, and certainly if there are no fresh debutants, he'd have to come very firmly into the picture. Are there any other rookies that we should talk about, or are you happy to just keep it to Art this week?
I might just mention Harrison Jones, who debuted for Hawthorn, had a 54. This is his third year on the Hawks list, playing off the rookie list, but has looked good at VFL level, good disposal numbers, and I think performed admirably on the weekend, didn't sort of stand out or anything. It's just I also noticed that Hanrahan came out of the side to get Jones his spot, so a bit of you know, job security issues there. Mitchell Hibbert also debuted for Essendon on the weekend. He's a former North Melbourne player, if you remember the name. I don't know about if you've got a different view, Mark, but I wasn't all that impressed by him, and I think probably comes back out of the side when Zach Merritt returns.
Yeah, I think we've got Stringer coming out, so it'll be interesting. I guess Francis comes back in probably. I think they're talking about playing Francis forward for Stringer, though. Yeah, it's probably a difficult Essendon side to get into at the moment for a rookie, but we picked him for a reason, and I thought he wasn't great, but I felt like if you gave him five games, he might start to get his feet and actually play all right. I wasn't not impressed.
I shouldn't phrase it that I didn't like him. I just thought I wasn't sort of blown away. And I know we've got a few other guys in the outer with, you know, Guelphy hasn't had many games or any games this year. Dylan Clark, I think, is still out of the side. So I'm just a little concerned about his job security.
And apparently we're taking everyone to the hub, everyone that's not injured.
All right. Just a quick return to the midfielders, because I realised that I skipped through one player. We got a question from Sam Perkins on Facebook about Fife. If apparently Fife might play this week. It went from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3, and people are like, all right, this is Fife all over again. We'll trade him out.
They've pulled a Sam Sturt on us.
This week. Yeah, Sam Sturt 2.0. It's Fife.
Ross Lyon's gone, but they're fucking around with injury that's remains.
Yeah, Peter Bell is still there.
Just trust the doctors at Fremantle. They must have super healing powers because everyone's out for just a week.
We didn't mention him, but actually, if Fife's back and he's already had his scheduled hamstring injury, do you still avoid Mark, or do you now return post hamstring?
I think he's still got another scheduled hamstring injury to come, doesn't he? At 650 plus 675 or something, that's a bit too much, especially with a 75 in his price. I think that you watch him come back and hopefully watch him get down to about that 600 mark, and then we can all bring him in so that he can get injured again.
Also, I think we've had Fife before where we've kept him. He's come back and then he re-injured himself in the first game back because he played partially injured. I've had too many bad Fife injury stories.
As you can tell from my comments, I have too many.
All right, let's go to trade outs. We've covered most of the show in part, so we'll wrap up pretty quickly, actually. This one's from Jesse Turner, one of our patrons, just asking about Viney. He's a must trade, right?
I'm leaning towards not.
So because he's already at 590?
490 because he's dropped.
490, sorry, yeah.
No, not really. Probably because of the sort of stuff that I was saying at the start of the show, which was just holding those guys and just focusing on upgrading the rookies first and then sorting that out. Like, if he's 490, is he really going to post a bunch of 60s and drop down to 420 and then I trade him out? Or is he more
like... Well, that's what I'm worried about. What I'm legitimately worried about.
Or is he more likely to post to 110 in there and sort of stay at the 450 plus mark and then I can deal with him later? I'm leaning towards that option. So, yeah, his disposal on the weekend was awful. Just went missing in the last quarter completely. He was on 57 at three quarter time and finished with 60. So, I don't know. I think I'm out of step on this one, and I think that you're probably right.
I don't know about that. So, last week when I made the call to keep Viney, it was essentially, right, if you bank Viney now, you acknowledge he's probably going to drop in price. He's playing Richmond this week. You are likely not going to trade him out for quite a while. Then he scores 60, which is way... I thought he'd score like 90 or 80 again. He scores 60, and then I'm just emotional right now. You know, I am definitely emotional. I'm pissed off. Like, I mean, how many things are going wrong right now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm emotional. It's frustrating. Like, I think I've made previous points where you sell at a high, you don't sell at a low. With Viney, you're selling at a low now, right? Like, what's the point of moving on him on at 490, really?
Yeah, like, and I think that's where I'm sitting. Like, if it wasn't for the carnage that happened with selections late last week, I probably would have traded Viney out.
100%.
But though all of those things just made it not possible to do it. And now I kind of feel like, well, is the time still right? Like last week was the time was right. Is the time still right? Personally, got just other things that I'm going to focus on in my team, and I might get Devaney eventually, and hopefully he comes back and kills it. In the meantime, I think that the tricky bit is that it's really hard for him to average premium numbers when you have Brayshaw, Oliver, Petrarca, Gorn all scoring quite well. So it's really hard to average over 100 as a fifth midfielder.
Yeah, my frustration with Melbourne, especially because I've got a lot of Melbourne players. I don't even have Gorn.
I wouldn't be touching Oliver this week.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just because Melbourne are not. If Melbourne were a top 18, they'd be. You'd have a lot of premiums there. There are a lot of guys just hamstrung by the fact that they're comp. they're part of this Davis. I read something on the weekend. They have won. What is it? Six games since their 2018.
Since they made the prelim.
Like something ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right.
And of all the games they've won, like 33% of them were against Carlton or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're in awful form right now. And that concerns me about Viney, though, right? Like, Viney could average 85, Mark. And I think if Viney averages 100, keeping him is fine. If Viney averages 85, he'll actually go back in price and be just shit. A guy scoring 85, I might as well downgrade to a rookie. Like, honestly, the cash generation gains there is better than the point scoring. 85 isn't enough.
Yeah, I think one thing I'd just bring into the mix here is that with Rao gone, we're now in there's potentially another rookie on field in the midfield, and I've just been super disappointed with the scoring. You know, when McInerney scores a 55 or something, I think I had the option to loophole this weekend, and I was just like, snap keep, 55, that's a... That's much better than
30.
Tyler Brown's going to do, or Marlon Pickett's not even playing. Harley Bunnell's not even playing.
Especially because when the variance hits you, it hits you in the 30s this year.
Yeah.
Like, normally a bad game, 50.
Exactly. And so I think we just need to bring that into the thinking about Viney, is that maybe in a normal year you go, well, why have I spent this much money on a guy? I could just have a 120K guy who scores 60s. But I think this year we can't even bank on that. We could have a 120K guy who scores 30s and then gets dropped. Or,
you know why I'm even more angry, Mark?
Why?
Because you actually gave me the right advice, which is to tell me that Viney is not the right move. You said, I don't think Viney is a good move.
After that one.
Yeah. And I 100% agree. Like, I was only bringing in Viney as like a 2-week stepladder. And like, even then it was already like, middling, like just about middling, but we'll try a different strategy this year. And if he has another 130, whew, this will be sweet. But fuck, it's worked out so badly. The fact that I traded into one of your plays that you're like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't trade into a 400K mid-price and I did it. Oh, that hurts. I don't like making those mistakes.
Direct all complaints to Connor McKenna.
Yeah. Quickly on trade out rookie targets, Chris Long, one of our patrons, is just asking about who want to take out. Buderick, Brown, and Starcevic are the three he mentioned, and they're the three, honestly, that came up in my team, either because they've just had poor scores, Buderick and Brown, and Starcevic, or with Starcevic, I guess he's also gone up enough in price at 300K to be worthwhile. Buderick and Brown, notably, 230 is probably not ideal, especially Buderick having a mid-forward flexibility is quite good. I'm most tempted on Starcevic, but I honestly think a lot of this will be dependent on what premium you can afford with an upgrade. Like, if trading out Buderick and Brown means you can't upgrade, but trading out Starcevic means you can, I kind of think you have to trade out Starcevic so that you can start your upgrading. Any thoughts on how you trade out your rookies?
My priority there is Brown first, Tyler Brown. Hasn't really showed anything since round one, and I think his spot in the side is probably up for debate a little bit. He's not worth a lot yet. That's why getting Arts, I think, this week is a good move, because a lot of these rookies, like last week when we were looking to trade into rookies, we were looking at like Hill, Young and Sarong and Green. We were looking at players that were like nearly 200,000. So the fact that you can get a mature age rookie for the not full basement, but for a normal rookie price, I think that I really think you need to prioritize that. And 100K from Brown is not ideal, but it's okay. Buderick, I kind of see him potentially being in my side for the next 10 weeks. Just that mid-forward availability is just a huge advantage. So unless another mid-forward comes along, I think Buderick, who seems to have decent job security, is likely to stay in my side. I can definitely understand the temptation to trade Starcevic. If I could do Rao and Starcevic to Yo and Ridley this week, I would, but I'm about 10K short. And I think that Starcevic holds his spot as a result because I can't actually upgrade him. And I think that just watching him on the weekend, like, he was really low scoring for the first three quarters and then got 20-odd points in the last quarter. I just think that he's got some more big games in him, and I think we'll see 300 again with him. So just not a short-term priority for me.
I'm pretty sure this dude will get to 400 by some stage this year. Like, he's a big boy. He's a talented kid. He plays in a club that looks like a top four contender. He plays on a wing. Like, there's so many boxes that tick. I think to Faz's previous point, remember the guy you're trading out is a guy who, like, you have to replace scoring for. Mm-hmm. And so ideally you don't want to pull Starcevic out. Any thoughts on rookies from you, Faz?
The point I mentioned earlier is that the current thinking is Rao Starcevic, because that lets me do the double upgrade this week. Though the more I've heard Mark talk about Arts, the more convinced I'm getting that he might be somebody you do need to consider this week. And probably that's not something you can really answer until Thursday night, and we've seen team sheets see what options might be available next week. But yeah, Art certainly looks like a good one.
Cool. All right, last couple of questions for the week. I think we actually have already been through Whitfield, so I'll skip through him. And Ridley, I think we have actually already talked about. But I just wanted to double check. I think we talked about Ridley in context of Elliot Yeo, but as a standalone, I'm guessing you're both recommending Ridley as a trade-in target, even though he's gone up another 50K this week.
Yes.
Yeah, still like, obviously more risk this week with the price going higher, but I think that he's still a good option, because I think the other players I'd be looking at in the back line are all sort of around that 550 mark still. So you've still got a fair saving by bringing Ridley in.
And that's because you see him averaging potentially as a top six?
Roundabout, yeah, sort of top eight type defender, yeah.
Same as you, Mark?
Yeah, at this stage, I mean, we've got four rounds plus two preseason games. That's six rounds of scoring where he's scored well in every single game and has been building to this point in his career. So,
yeah. Just saying, guys, we could have done with this confidence when he was 410, 350.
Probably 330 would have been a good time to have this sort of confidence.
Come on, Essendon fans. Help me out a little.
It's about half an hour before last week's game, I guess.
How did we end up with Devin Smith?
I'm probably always a little bit more circumspect on the Bombers, because I kind of feel it's a little bit difficult to get my...
Obviously, I take the opposite approach.
Yes, you
bringing
do.
Bringing us to our next question.
Jack Stephen, Tom Stewart, Menicola, who else? Bring him in.
Hey, look, Jack Stephen, 306K though. Too much? He scored a 20 for 36.
280, 310, bring him in. 360 seems like a lot.
He's at 306 now, Mark.
Yeah, 306.
Oh, well, that...
Yeah,
so I thought he said 360. Yeah, well, that fits right into my fucking category then, doesn't it?
I mean, the thing is, he scored 20 and 36 and looked so, like, as a Geelong supporter, egregiously frustrating to watch the first 2 weeks. Then he scores 95 against Gold Coast, and I'm like, yeah, maybe he can come on my Supercoach team.
Did seem for a point like Geelong were running a competition where a fan could just, you know, win a raffle and get to play a game for the club.
More to the point, though, he's playing some time in the midfield, but he's playing that mid-forward role. So he's playing on the half-forward line, rotating through as a small forward and on the wing. So at 306, what do you reckon, Faz?
I don't like it because I'm getting tempted. I went back and had a look at his previous scoring. So averaged 74 from seven games last year, but in the 4 years from 2015 to 2018, he missed two home and away games in total. And season averages were 104, 103, 91, 95. Anything close to that at that price is fantastic. You know, 300K, even if he gets to the, you know, the lowest of those four at a 91 average, that's amazing. But I think, as we've mentioned in some previous weeks, the time for risk-taking, you know, the earlier you can do it in the season, I think the better on these type of players, these mid-prices who can spike up and almost cheat yourself to an upgrade by being able to side-swap Jack Stephen to a bona fide premium rather than having to do two trades with a rookie. I think just the longer you get into the season, the more, you know, back to the guns and rookies, and hopefully it's just guns by that stage because you've upgraded your team, I think you want to get more back towards that, and then it's just that awkward price there at 306. He's sort of in between the two.
So his price point is so attractive that you could potentially go Raoul Brown, to Whitfield, Jack Stephen.
Mm.
Yeah. And you only need like 10-20K to do that.
Mm.
I think that's where it might become a little bit interesting.
Yeah, so I think it's probably I would say I'm almost ruling myself out of this trade because of the situation I'm in with cash in bank going into the weekend.
Yeah, I reckon I might trust the advice of the man ranked in the top 1,000.
Oh, that results-based thinking is part of the problem there, Mark. You need to come over to the light side where I am. Okay. Focus on decision-making, mate.
Yeah, I think I hadn't honestly, seriously considered him because I thought he was a bit more expensive, obviously. I just think that there's other players out there this week. I don't have a strong opinion either way.
Yeah, look, I think he's risky. I just think he could also work out. So I just wanted to flag him because he's an option for people who are in a tougher spot as well. That price point is pretty cool.
All right. Unfortunately, Mark's just dropped off and we've gone on for a little bit. So we'll call the show there. I think we got to the end of our topics anyway. So fairly nice timing. All the best for the upcoming round and we'll catch you next week. See ya.